This Sunday. Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gas, but mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands for the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
Catch me. You can't catch Chris. You can't catch a lot of people, but you have caught Long Island's only automotive talk show in Motormouth Radio, 90.3 WHBC. You've got us right here. And Chris, my co-host, is over there fleeing from somebody. How's it going? Yes? Well, I'm... I see Chris's mouth moving, but I don't hear him. Let's try that. Say no.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you now.
All righty, there I am. Hello.
Excellent. Good to see you.
I'm just trying to figure out what that song was.
Oh, that's that's a classic. That's You Can't Catch Me by the master Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry. Yeah. I was like, is that Bo Diddley? Is that Chuck Berry? Who is that?
You know, I listened to this whole CD. There's and of course, music provided today by Infinity. Yeah, Cream, we're good. We're good. Yes, thank you. And 28 songs on this CD. It really covers a lot. And as I was listening to it in the garage, I said, boy, you know, just like when you listen to Dick Dale, the king of the surf guitar.
Sure.
After the third song, they all start sounding alike. And all of Chuck Berry's beats and things, also, and it's very Bo Diddley-ish. They were very kind of locked in back then. These guys sounded a lot alike. But,
They got a style and a flair, and they just kept repeating it. That's the truth.
And it worked, because it worked, you know?
Sure.
How do you explain Motormouth Radio? We've been doing the same thing for 20 years. I don't know. Is it working for us? I don't know.
No. You know, I've come to realize nothing, no conventional, what would you say? No technique has ever worked for us.
Yeah, true.
Yet we're still here.
I'll tell you the truth. Yes, I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to do this, of course. I wouldn't want to give it up for anything. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it's so true. You know, you just... you just keep going.
Just to have this venue to
annoy people.
To annoy and expound.
Right, there you go.
Crank it up and piss off the neighbors. That's right. This is Motormouth Radio.
That's it. So yeah, I was looking to get a guest today. I was trying to get Mr. Clay Kuhn from down at Kuhn Trucking. He's a big YouTube phenom. He has.
He hung up on you again. Right?
No, he had something to do, some family stuff to take care of. But we're going to
go wash his hair.
Yeah, right. Well, because Clay also was out at SEMA, and not that I want to beat the dead horse of SEMA, but the thing was Clay has now brought back, he does tool stuff. He does a lot of tool stuff and repair.
Right,
so
sure.
He's done, if you visit his channel on YouTube, Kuhn Trucking, you'll see he's done a few reviews on these, you know, not maybe newer tool companies or tool companies that you hadn't known about in the past that are now kind of making that next step to be, to get in the ring with the big guys. So, we'll get him there. We should have him next week to talk about that. So, right now, for this week, it's you and I, and whoever wants to join us by calling 516-572-7440. And, of course, you could check all of our socials. We're Motormouth Radio on the web and on Twitter and on Facebook, and we're Real _ Motor Mouth Radio on Instagram. Been kind of quiet lately. You know, I haven't been posting stuff. I've done a few jobs, but it was either the kind of thing that they were too involved or messy to be taken pictures of, or I have stuff. I also have stuff backed up that just hasn't gotten uploaded yet. So,
well, it's funny because I have been busy being victoriously. I'm on a what would you say, on a roll for solving all of my automotive problems. This week has been the week I have been the master of my domain this week.
Oh, boy.
Automotively.
Look at you.
Yes. Yes. Want to know why?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. The week started. I mean, I was a mess last week. Last week, I was a whiny little so-and-so. I was just not happy. Nothing was working. This week, everything all got straightened out.
Wow.
So we'll start off with the drive cycle on my Explorer, because I think I told you I went to go get the car inspected and my O2 sensors weren't resetting.
Yeah.
And I went through the diagnostics and I thought one of them was bad. And I swapped one of them out. And then I just said, you know what? I'm going to just try and take it on the drive cycle. And this was last week.
Okay.
And I realized that those O2 sensors weren't resetting. And I'm like, go, what is going on? So, of course, I do some research and I find out that, and I hate to say this, but it was one of those things that I went, this is not going to work. But it said, change your battery.
Wow.
It says the battery, it says the computer needs a fully charged battery. I'm like, my battery is 6 years old. It's fully charged.
Where, it said that where? In your, through your scanner?
No, actually, looking online
in some of the
forums. And a lot of the forums were saying the same thing, which was leading me to the point where I'm going to have to change the battery.
Right.
So I bit the bullet and I swapped the battery out on the car and I took it for the next drive cycle. And believe it or not, everything reset and I was able to take the car in on Monday. Yeah, Monday. Took the car in and it passed with flying colors.
Oh, well.
So I was very pleased.
I guess
that
we
I got
have to believe it. Did you? Now you said you swapped the battery out. Does that mean like the Mazda or the Tracker is now missing a battery, or did you actually go down and lay out the scuttle at the parts counter?
You know me all too well.
Yes, there's a neighbor somewhere who can't start this morning. I know the old Brooklyn ways.
Gee, I wonder how that happened.
Yeah, I don't know. Terrible. It's an epidemic in this neighborhood.
Find a guy that's got the brand new battery.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we were able to go and legitimately purchase a battery and drag it home.
What brand of battery, if I may ask, did you choose to purchase?
Because I go to Walmart, baby.
I've heard some not bad things about those batteries. That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I went to Walmart. Now, mind you, the battery that I had in the car was legitimately 3 years old. I bought it in 2019, the end of 2019. So it was, I can't say it was on its way out because I usually give my batteries about 4 years before I contemplate getting rid of them. So
was it a 36-month battery? Okay, so that's 3 years. I mean, I found that I buy 5-year batteries typically, and last time I had a change around my Mazda before I sold it, I was like, damn, I just did this. And then I actually went through my record log and highlighted it all, and you know what? Every battery I changed, that's the one thing I've did most in that car through the life that I've had it, was I've changed batteries every 5 years, almost to the month.
Really?
I have the records. When I looked at the records, I said, this isn't lying. I write down when I do it. It was like, within a month or two, either way,
Wait a minute. You've changed a battery every 5 years. How long have you owned this car?
No, the Mazda that I bought in 2006.
Oh, okay. Okay.
The Protégé we've had even longer, but, you know. But I had the Mazda 3 since 2006, and yeah, every 5 years I change that battery.
How long have you had the Protégé? We'll get back to race.
Remember what year we bought it. I'm going to say, it's an 2002. I think we got it around maybe 2005-ish or so, before the 3. So it was either 2004 or 2005.
Really?
Yeah, I'm driving it today. It's still kicking.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? And I think we had this conversation on this program, and I had mentioned when gasoline was going up, Mm-hmm. I had mentioned that I admired the fact that you still had that protege when I've been telling you to sell it, get rid of it, get rid of it, get rid of it. And you dug your heels in and you kept this car. And when gas was up to like $4 a gallon, that was pretty much one of your mainstays, right? That car moved right up the list in value.
But when I had the three, the three got probably better mileage than the protege did because it was, you know, five speed. And, you know.
Yeah, but you did what I did. You sold your economy car before the gas spike.
Well, this time, yeah. But we did have that gas spike a few years ago where it went crazy back in
'08.
Yeah.
Still own an economy car. I'm looking out at my field when gas was $4 a gallon. My stable, everything was six cylinders and eight cylinders. All the four cylinders were gone.
Right, right.
So that's why I went out and bought that Tracker.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what turned me on to that. Keep a four-banger vehicle in your stable just in case gas goes. And up here, you need a car for anything up here in the Nutmeg State because you can't walk and get a quart of milk. You'll be gone all day.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not really worth it. So you do need an economy vehicle with the rest of your big behemoths.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, I was able to do something, Ray, this week that I've never done before.
Comb your hair. It's a Tracker. Oh, okay. What was that?
I picked up a girl.
Won a race.
Strike runner. Two. No, forget it. Oh. Strike three.
Oh, okay.
That car can't do any of those things.
All right, okay.
I had a hard time shifting from first into second gear.
Yeah, we talked about that.
When the transmission was cold, and I was a little concerned over this.
Right.
So I ordered the solenoid kit for it.
Oh, there was a kit. Okay. Did the kit contain multiple solenoids or rebuild parts to fix the bad ones?
No, it contained OEM, allegedly, OEM solenoids straight from China. And it came with two solenoids attached to like a bridge. One was, I think, the 1-2 shift, and the other one was the 2-3 shift.
So they sold you a bridge. Look at that.
They sold me a bridge.
All right.
And then there was a rear solenoid that mounted on the other side of the valve body. Right. And I was still trying to figure out what this solenoid is called. I don't even know.
Uh-huh.
I've researched the Jesus out of this thing. I still can't find the name for it.
Okay.
But I was able to purchase all three of those. And I dropped the pan again and got in there and was able to remove the old solenoids. And that rear solenoid, I just swapped them all out. It took a day. And the reason why it took a day to do it was because I was swimming in very dangerous waters. Because it's real easy to mess these things up.
Okay.
And I was able to pull it all apart. Not the valve body. The valve body stayed on the transmission. But I was able to get those solenoids, all three of them out, and replace them with a minimal amount of fuss. I was able to check everything. I had two valves that I had in my hand. I had transmission valves in my hand, right?
Okay.
Never in my life did I ever have such a thing.
Well,
and
just to leapfrog a little bit to tease the next story, I had a good friend's rear end in my hands yesterday. So think about that while you tell me about your solenoids. So, okay.
Oh, I'm looking at you a whole new way.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So was I. Yeah.
Was it supple? Just tease me a little bit.
Hard and firm. Yeah, really hard. Yeah, definitely. Hard and firm. Yeah.
Like oh, can't iron. Wait for this story. Oh, yeah. I'm wrapping this one up sooner than later.
Okay.
So, so I was able to swap them out. And what was nice was when I was putting the transmission fluid back in the car after everything was buttoned up, I put about 3 quarts in. It was about 5 quarts that had come out of the transmission. I put 3 quarts back in and then started the car up. And it started. It was fine. And I put it in gear with the 3 quarts of transmission fluid in. And it went into gear, like, well.
Oh, good.
Like, it didn't go into gear, like, you know how some cars go into gear like this kind of sounds slushy. This was responsive. It was like boom, in gear. I was like, woo! And I put it in reverse and boom, like that. It was really responsive. So I had a good feeling about this. So I put the rest of the transmission fluid in and I took the car out and it shifted just fine. Beautiful. I was very pleased, but I still have one more hurdle to get over. And that's when I go out to start it up after this program because it sat overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see if it still behaves the same way.
Yeah.
Because that was the problem. It would sit overnight, and then when you'd get into it and start it up and take off, it would hang in first gear. It wouldn't go into second. And you had to rev it up to like 6,000 RPM before it would go into second gear. But then it was fine.
Right.
Which was that first jump. So now I want to see if that still happens. If that still happens, then I'm going to be crying right now.
It was funny because I was behind a guy in an Explorer 2 days ago, and we were waiting at a light. There was a slight rise in the road. You know, it wasn't a hill. It was just a slight rise. And when the
you're on Long Island, that is a hill.
When the light changed, he rolled backwards. And I'm thinking, he's got a stick in this thing? You know, as he's rolling backwards, I see him in his side view mirror looking, you know, back and forth. And I'm thinking, oh my God, there's someone behind me. I couldn't go anywhere. I'm like, this guy's going to, hit the front of the car.
Right.
And then in a second, then the car just like kind of bounced and I heard the RPM come up and they took off. I'm like, oh, good transmission you got in that Ford body.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
He's got a slush box.
Yeah. So like, okay, no stick for you. You just need you got to go see Pat Seppi or something.
Yeah, right. You need a flush.
Yeah, something.
But yeah, so that was repair number two, and there was a whole bunch of others. But I want to hear about your story, young man. Tell me about your exciting week.
I went to see a good friend of ours yesterday, a good friend Paul, and it really was on a journey to talk about audio equipment and stuff. But Paul's working on his car, and I said, look, don't let me stop you. You know, if you're going to work. He goes, I'm going to make you help. I'm like, sure, make me help. So sure. I actually we. I had to press axle bearings onto the axles. So this is a B-body Chrysler.
Right? Oh, okay.
So we had to press the bearings on, which became a chore because, there's semantics in play with plates and tubes and ways to jig that thing in a press. And there was a plate that he had gotten. It was almost like half inch thick, big steel, with a hole that the axle passed through. We were using that as a spacer and a load spreader, kind of.
Okay.
It looked great until we took the thing out of the press and realized that plate now had gotten pressed onto the axle, flared a little. We didn't see that.
Oh, boy.
Now we had to get it off.
Yeah, that happened.
And there was no way to jig it in the press to press it off because now you'd need a long, real tall press. Literally, we tried a few things and heated the damn thing up with acetylene torch and just took turns banging it with a hammer and got it to come off, luckily.
Wow.
It was an at one point I was like, you know what? We could have had the other one done already by the time that we're still fighting with this. But, hey, this is what happens in the garage, right?
Right, sure. You run into little issues.
So learn from that mistake and didn't make the same mistake with the second one. We use a different spacer and then installed the axles. And Chrysler uses – I had never installed Chrysler axles before. And it's interesting because on the right side – well, once you put the axles in and the splines mesh in the pumpkin, the axles have a lot of play back and forth. Bump, bump, bump. I mean, like quarter inch or more,
Ooh.
So there is an adjuster. It's a plate that's on the right side axle, and it has holes in it. And what you have to do is turn that, and it preloads the axle. And on both sides, there's a button on the inside of the axle with that's pinned in place. So as you turn that, it draws it in and preloads the axle, and you use a dial indicator to set the preload.
Wow.
So luckily the hardest part was jigging the dial indicator, sticking it on a leaf spring and trying to off the axle flange, and that's only it's 10 to 12 what was the spec? I looked up. It was 8 to 12 thousandths was the spec.
Okay.
So, okay, we shot for 10. Got it right away. Bang. Hit it. 10 thousandths. There's a little lock tab you put on there. You lock the nut on, and away you go, and you're done.
So, cool.
Yeah, that was the afternoon. We did that yesterday afternoon. And so it was good because I had never had done that on a Chrysler before. And it's weird because, with the GMs, the axle bearings are pressed into the housing, and then the gear oil is what lubricates the axle bearings. On the Chrysler, the bearings get pressed onto the axle, and you grease the bearings with wheel bearing grease. Mm-hmm. Like, wow, that was foreign to me, again, because I'd never done Chrysler axle bearing axles before.
Well, that also has the rear where the what would you say, the front of the pumpkin comes off.
It's a Dana 60 in that car. Right.
Yeah, it's not like on a GM vehicle where there was a back access plate that would pop off and all the guts are in there that way.
Correct.
It's opposite. Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it's a bane of my existence because I actually have to do the bearing in the front of the front bearing of the rear end by the universal joint on the Chrysler. It's leaking a little bit.
Well, that's a problem because you have the pinion, and that pinion nut is, we were talking about that because this one has to be done. It's very, very tight. So to get it off, you need my 4-foot breaker bar is what you need.
Yeah, exactly.
And room to move it. And then when you put it on, you have to set the preload, and that's when you need, you know, we talk about different types of tools, and one tool that's become passe that no one really uses, I don't even have it anymore, it's a beam-style torque wrench, the one with the little needle that goes back and forth.
Yeah, I still have one.
You'll need that, because when you set the preload on the pinion, you need to see the preload. It's like using a dial indicator. So it's not, you don't need a click type, you need to watch it, and that's when your beam style will come in handy, you'll see.
I've been reading, doing some research on that job, and a lot of individuals have been measuring the threads of the pinion threads that the nut sits on. They measure the amount of threads and then put that nut back on that measurement amount, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So I'm a little leery on doing that. I'm actually thinking like this should be a job that one of those jobs I don't want to do. I don't want to do this job.
Well, you know, that's the thing. We've always said that if you're not comfortable doing a job or don't have the tools or equipment, there's no shame in farming something out to somebody who does know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The problem now has become, does anyone know how to do this job?
yeah, because a lot of like Jeeps or four-wheel drives, they all have rear ends with pinions and you know, but I would find a shop that does, well, you got to find one that does rear end work that actually is more familiar with it than, and look for an old guy. Look for an old guy because they'll understand, you know?
Yes, it's true. Oh, yeah. And I've already had a vehicle I brought to a shop here. I had, it was wheel bearings. Uh-huh. On a Subaru, and I saw how that needed to be taken apart, and I was like, I'm not going near this. It was, I had a white Subaru at one time, a Subaru wagon, where if you looked under it, every single nut and bolt looked fused together.
Yeah, I know that look, yes.
You know that look, right? Yeah. So I'm like, I'm not going anywhere near this, because I'd still be out there doing it today.
Right.
So I brought a car over to a buddy of mine had recommended a place up here in the Bridgeport area, and I went and brought the car. And I had a laugh because the guy said to me as he was backing the Subaru out, he got out, closed the door, looked me dead in the face and said, don't bring this car back here.
Ever again.
Don't ever bring this car back.
I've seen cars like that.
Yeah, it must have been a real chore to break every single nut loose on that car.
There's a really cool tool. Brian and I have talked about it a number of times, Mecha Man Brian. It's a new hub tool. It's got a catchy name and you'd think I'd remember it, but I don't. It's a really good service tool for doing hub bearings and things like that. So let's go to the phones and go to the fun and say, hi, you're on the Motor Mouths.
Hey, Ray.
It's Pirate Paul.
Hey, what's up, brother love? How are you?
All right. So you got me to call it. All right.
Yeah. How's your rear end?
Talking about your rear end.
Great. Good. After yesterday's debacle, huh?
It had hands all over it. Well, actually, the rear end was kind of left alone. Yeah, but that's the thing. You know, that's what happens when you work on stuff. We all get into those. Like, luckily, that was one we were able to get out of. Sometimes you're not out of it for days.
No, I know.
Paul, the big question is, did you feel cheap the next morning?
Yeah, I feel cheap every morning.
You know whether Ray is there or not.
I'm earmarking.
Yeah, whether he's there or not, yeah.
I'm earmarking that clip. You know that. Let's see. All right. You'll hear that again in some future.
I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
This show's like the internet. Nothing ever dies.
Exactly.
No.
Even the things it should. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was nice having another set of hands that actually kind of knew what they were doing. No.
Right, right.
That knew
on your rear end.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, another set of hands on my rear end.
How's but that car coming along, Paul?
It's slow but sure. Slow but sure.
And you this is actually what I told Brian. I said, get the rear end in your car. And like I told Paul, I said, wow, you got half a roller. You know, you could put your wheels on this thing. And then when a car becomes a roller, now it becomes a whole nother status of restoration. It's getting there. You know, it's still far from there, but at least it's, you know, now it can be moved under.
Right. Well, now you feel like you accomplished something.
Right. Right.
You know, but I'm still, I'm in the process now. I was out here last night. I just taking off the driver's side spindle and all. I want to get the K frame out.
Right, right.
You know, I'm going to drop it out because I'm trying to finish up painting the underside of the car. So I want to get it all, you know, lifted up with everything out and get the whole underside, you know, painted, undercoated, whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, get all that squared away. Then from there, I go to the engine compartment.
It was funny, Paul, because I was able to tell my wife last night, I said, you know, I told her what we had done and all, and I said, it's really good to see that even a guy that has a nice, new, big, beautiful garage, we still had to move crap out of the way to get to what we had to work on. Because after you, I came home and I worked in my closet. I call my garage a closet because I'm so constrained by crap. I keep getting poked with stuff. And I said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're in.
That's right. The bigger the place, the more junk you have.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
that's the truth.
Yeah. Well, I still have all the junk just in a smaller place, but
Yeah. Well, see, that's why I put everything on wheels.
I know. That was a brilliant, Chris, every piece of equipment we had to move was literally on wheels. And that's and Paul has a floor that can roll without tipping something over, too, which is kind of nice.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. You can't do that in my garage because it's like the Carlsbad Caverns. The cement floor is a mess.
Yeah. Very nice.
You can't put anything on wheels.
Yeah, that was my thing. I figured, you know what? I said, I want everything, all my cabinets, everything's on wheels, you know? So this way, if I just, you know, I have to clean, I can do that. If I decide to rearrange the garage, I can just roll stuff around and put it where I want, you know?
Yes. That was a smart move. Smart move.
That is
it makes
move.
A difference. The only thing I don't have wheels on my grinder yet, you know, the belt sander.
Right.
That was
right,
the only thing I had to pick up.
Right, right.
I didn't buy the wheels yet. I was cheap.
Well, the powder coating oven.
Well, no, the powder coating oven's getting a stand.
Okay.
So I haven't built it yet, you know. My supply of bed angle is getting low.
Yeah.
I have to find a few more bed frames.
Right, right. No, those bed frames, that's a builder's tip. Find a bed frame, even a twin frame. That angle iron is great. It really is. Yeah.
It's great for building stands for everything. Yes. I mean, everything I have that needed a stand, you know, I short of like the welders and stuff, but I mean like the plasma cutter, the freaking, you know, that grinder here, all that stuff. I've made stands for everything.
Yeah.
You know, then I go on Amazon and buy the wheels. You know, I buy the dual locking wheels, the ones that lock the pivot.
Right, right.
You know, as well as the wheel. It makes a difference.
Yeah.
Because when I first used those ones that don't lock the pivot, great, the thing won't roll away, but it still kind of wiggles around as those wheels rotate.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering with the grinder. You said you haven't put wheels on the grinder yet. And I'm thinking to myself, you got to lean on a grinder.
I shouldn't say grinder. It's not that kind of grinder. It's a one-inch belt sander.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's a one-inch belt sander. You know, that type like they use for like doing blades and stuff. I love that narrow belt sander. Yeah. I just like it. I like the way you just like that better than the big wide ones. And those you don't lean into.
Right.
No. You know, it's so funny, Paul, because I'm picturing what you have. I haven't been in your garage, but I'm picturing it kind of looks like young Frankenstein with all the big glass ball and the two antenna and the electrodes coming up.
I actually have one of them. It's not in here yet, but I have one.
That's actually when you get over to the electronic side, not the mechanical side. Come on.
Yeah.
We got to go to the Tesla room.
You walk into the garage and everything turns black and white. Right?
Yeah, right. I actually have one of those plasma globes. I'm gonna put up on top of one of the shells here.
No, when the thing that I really like is the gold kitty with that does the bro hammer. It just sits there.
You know what? I'm looking at it and it's kind of dead. I think it needs a battery.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if that was like a forever potential machine because it was running pretty good yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the cold weather. Maybe it's got arthritis.
Yeah, I know. I do.
You know those, Chris, the lucky cat.
Yeah, of course. I see him in every
restaurant.
Yes,
Chinese restaurant in Brooklyn, at least every Chinese establishment on Avenue U had one of those things. It was one of those gold. How did you end up with that? Wait a minute.
You're going to ask Paul how he ended up with something? Jeez.
Oh, I can tell you this one. This one, I actually bought it. I bought it for work. Oh. All right. I said, I need some, when I come into work, I need something that makes me smile.
Okay.
You know, to laugh. So I had it in work. I bought it. Actually, I think I bought it on eBay or something. I think it was all of $2, I think they sell them for.
Wow.
They're cheap. They're dirt cheap. So I bought one and I had it in work for a while. And I said, I'm going to bring it home. So I put it up on the shelf here.
It looks good. Yeah. Looks good.
Well, you didn't see. I guess you missed the lava lamp, though, right?
No, I saw it. It's on the on the north wall.
Actually, that's the south
wall. I'm sorry. Yes, the south wall. Yeah. I saw it. It wasn't lit up, but I caught it.
No, it wasn't lit up, but I have it on a thing.
Yep. I was explaining to my wife how interested I was in your to do list that your wife wrote for you.
Oh, geez, yeah.
That was cool.
I have the official honey-do list taped up on the cabinet. Yeah,
those are great.
Yeah, yeah. And believe me, I won't bring it back in the house because it'll just get longer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it'll become like the Dead Sea Scrolls. It just becomes like the Torah, you
pretty
know?
Pretty much, yes. Yes, pretty much. It just never ends. So.
Exactly.
Right? Every time I cross one thing off, she's like, I'm, you know.
Oh, we got to fill that space.
Yeah, pretty much. But, yeah. No, today I'm doing stuff in the house. I got to do a few in the house things. Be nice and you know. And then I'll sneak back out here and I want to get that K frame dropped. I want to make my little platforms. I'm making. Well, Ray knows, but I'll tell you, Chris. I'm making like 8-inch tall platforms to sit my jack stands on.
Okay.
Just because I want to set the car up higher because otherwise, tall jack stands, they're $300 a set.
Right, sure. So you're actually making platforms for your jack stands.
Yes. My jack stands will have platform shoes.
Yeah. Put goldfish in them.
Yeah, right?
Holy smokes.
Well, yeah, I got to do the center of the car. I'm working on the center of the car now, you know.
Right.
And the lift I have is a scissor style. It's a mid-rise. So you can't access the center of the car when the thing's up on the
lift. That's the limitation of those types of lift, yes.
Got it.
But otherwise, they're great.
I could have brought over my ramp lifts. I bought those, the Benpack ramp lifts.
Yes, but it's the same idea, though. Lifts, I mean, it gives you more room,
the whole bottom of the car is free. You can roll from one end to the other on a creeper. You can go in the front and come out the back.
No, I understand, but where are you lifting from?
Either from the chassis or the pinch welds.
I'm going to say you're lifting from the pinch wells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, do you have anything, you know, like on these new cars, they sell those pinch weld adapters so they look like big hockey pucks?
I bought the pinch weld adapters. They're actually plastic blocks that have channels cut in them.
Okay.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to modify it because I have for my floor jack a round disc with two vertical walls on it that goes up on the pinch weld, but they put two strong neodendum magnets down in the bottom.
Yeah.
So you basically stick it on the pinch weld and you bring the jack under it. So when I use these blocks on these lifts, it's hard because you got to get it lined up perfect and it never lines up perfect. So I'm going to drill, I'm going to index this thing on my drill press and drill down and put four magnets in each one and I'll just stick them to the car and then raise the lift up to it.
Sure.
So I'm going
to. All right. Well, in that case, bring that thing over here and we'll put the car up on it. I'll move it to the other side and we'll put the car up on it. I'll use that.
Yeah, you should come over with your truck because they weigh 100 pounds a piece. So it'll be nice to like.
that's not that bad. How high do those things lift the car?
This is the, you know, I never actually measured it. This is the newer one, the 7,000. I think about 30 something inches.
30-something
inches. Something like that. I could look up the spec when I get home. I don't remember.
Okay.
Enough to get under it on a creeper easily.
I was going to say, you need more room than that.
Well, that's probably close to what I have it have this listed now. I have this probably not quite 30, but it's close. Why I have it on the stands with the when I put the, when I make those platforms, it'll bring me up to that height. It'll get me up to that height.
I'll send you a couple pictures of the cars I worked on with on the lifts, and you'll be able to see the height. So
30 inches is going to be enough to remove the K-frame on that, Paul?
You don't even need that much to remove the K-frame.
Really?
No, what I'm going to do, what I'm doing with the K-frame, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to right now the car's on jack stands, and I have the lift lowered so I can work in the center. What I'm going to do is put it on the lift, raise it up, okay, finish it. I'll unbolt. I have one of those Harbor Freight hydraulic tables, and I'm going to put that right under the K-frame, pop the four bolts, lower the K-frame out, roll it away, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Harbor Freight hydraulic table is the greatest thing.
Yes. You know?
I got to take a look at that. Yeah.
It really is.
It is, because I can put stuff on there, roll it out to my truck, you know, jack it up to the truck, and slide the stuff right in.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
My back's too old for...
I would buy one of them now if I had a place to put it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you can basically slide it under your workbench. I mean, the handle folds down flat and everything.
No, under my workbench is all the other stuff that I have.
No, I know. There's no room under your workbench.
No.
But all these little conveniences, you know, it's great. I mean, and that's what I used to put the rear back in the car. Because this rear is 200 pounds, you know.
Yeah.
Jeez. And I sat the rear on the table. I put the springs on, you know, I put the leaf springs on and lowered them.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I lowered them down, and then I brought the rear in from the back, brought the rear all the way up, and then just lifted the leaf springs and stuck the shackle bolts in.
That's easy when you have a leaf spring rear. I did mine with the coils, and I had it on the jack, and of course it was tipping right and left, and I was putting stands under it, and it was quite an ordeal to get the... But, you know, did it.
Like I said, I have to do that. I basically have to figure out a way I can do everything by myself, you know, when there's nobody here.
That was the thing. I did mine by myself as well, and that's what we talked about yesterday, where... You know, where you have to think sometimes, like the like with this axle, we got stuck with this plate. All right, now I got to go to caveman mode. How would I do this if I had no real tools? You know, it's like
right.
And we got to draw from that experience, and we do. You know, but that is the beauty of working with somebody else who knows what they're doing, because now you have someone to bang it off of, and you get more ideas. Because at one point, Paul says to me, come on, you got to have an idea. What? I'm like, no, I got no idea. I'm empty here, Paul. Come on. Sorry.
I was like, you got me into this.
Yeah. And we got out of it. So.
No, but the thing was, we tried it, you know, a few different ways. I tried some heat, you know, and things like that.
Right.
But then all of a sudden it hit me. I said, let's attack it on a piecemeal.
Right.
That's why I figured stand it up like that and just whack the, you know, the plate side.
Whack
to side
it with
like
a hammer. That's what we did.
Whack it with a hammer. That's it.
That's
and you
it.
Notice I got the biggest hammer I had in the box.
I noticed. I know. You know, the next thing would have been a small sledge.
But that's in there, too.
I know.
I didn't want to go total caveman.
I know. No, absolutely. Well, listen, I had fun. I enjoyed it. I'd rather get my hands in something instead of just sitting around. I mean, I love to sit around and BS with my friends, but, you know, to sit and do something and BS, that's a whole nother level of fun.
Sure.
So,
right. But I was very impressed because Ray actually remembered where everything went in the box.
Well, in the toolbox.
He remembered what went in what drawers. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
He only saw it once.
Right.
So, you know. I mean, I don't remember where half the stuff goes.
I do the same. In my own toolbox, I'm like, oh, damn it. What I'm opening is, where the hell? It's only been in there 40 years. Come on.
Right. How many times have you opened the wrong drawer?
Yes. All the time.
Oh, yeah. No, that's for sure. I got a whole bunch of junk that just goes in one drawer. That's it. Just,
yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
And nice and easy.
Right.
That's too funny.
Paul, we got to run our spots and take care of some business. So
okay, don't worry. I'll be calling you over for the next project.
You got it. And next time I'm going to hang around for...
I found somebody who's not afraid to get their hands dirty.
No, me? No, never.
Especially on your rear end.
Especially
on my rear end.
Exactly. You got it. All right, Paul.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. So long.
Take care, my brother. Right, be good. Right, be safe.
Bye. Okay.
All right. So long.
So long. All right, Chris, we got to take care of a little bit of business. We went past the bottom of the hour a little bit. I have to say that if you listen to this station, there's a show you're going to want to tune into. It's called Rock Overdose, which is good if you want to overdose on rock.
Sure. Why not?
What a catchy name.
Yeah.
It's Mondays and Fridays at 11 p.m. So if you're out at night and you want something to listen to, it's also Wednesdays at 6 p.m. and Sundays at 4. So you can catch it this afternoon. You can never truly overdose on rock music. I know that. Listen for classic rock from the 60s to the 90s and call in your requests to 516-572-7440. It'll be the number.
That's right. You can go into rock withdrawal because the schedule is just so mixed up.
And also, coming up, this is it's holiday time again. So the Cruise Through Holiday Toy Drive again is happening. Town of Oyster Bay, where you donate an unused, unwrapped toy. Bring your used toys to us. We'll
bring your used toy. Right. No, they don't want those.
You'll bring a smile to a child this holiday season. Plus, you can see Santa, and there's a letter drop for Santa letters, too. The holiday spirit is brought to you by Optimum. This is Saturday, December 3rd from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at John Burns Park in Massapequa. The rain date's December 4th. And speaking of the rain date, I have to say that they just keep giving me papers.
That I see.
Your WHBC weather forecast is powered by Pantano's Gourmet in Hewlett, Uniondale, and Garden City Park. Today or tonight, today, the weather is showery. Actually, it was gray when I went out to the chiropractor this morning. Then it rained, and then when I came here, it's brightened up. I'd say it's sunny. It's brighter. I think we're going to have partly clouds in the afternoon, much cooler. The temperature did drop with the high of 53. And tonight, clear skies, low of 36. So tell me about the honor group of the hour, please.
Sure, and also taking a look out the basement weather window here. It looks like we got some sun. Got some sun and about 10 degrees cooler than you.
The good thing is people here don't care about Connecticut weather, so they just want to hear the honor group of the damn hour. So tell us.
There's some people here in Connecticut that don't care about
this. I believe it, yes.
Well, anyway, to brighten it up a little bit, the Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour, if you have no place to put your cell phone in your classic car, if you tried sticking it in the ashtray, but it only goes in diagonally, that's if the silly thing goes in at all. You can't put it between the bucket seats because it'll slide off the transmission hump and get lost in that crevice where only loose change and French fries go. You know that. You know it down in there somewhere, right? If you have a console, you can't put it there because it'll slide around with a chance of scratching up that fancy faux wood grain that we all have. And you can't throw it up on top of the dash because that thing is so armor-alled that the phone will go shooting out the window the next left turn. So what happens is it makes you appreciate the cup holders in your wife's car where the phone fits perfectly now, doesn't it?
Nice.
So if you have no place to stick your cell phone while you're driving your classic car, then you are part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
Nice, which was going to lead me into no particular place to go, but I'm not going to play that. I'm going to talk about, we were talking about rock overdose.
Yep.
So, on 90.3 WHPC, let's talk a little bit more about some rock, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can lose it. Any old time you use it.
My name is Carl Anthony with Automoblog and AutoVision News, and you're listening to Ray and Chris on Motormouth Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limerick and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y sí, hablamos español.
More information is available at 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Your You're listening to the Motor Mouths.
Hey, how's it going? First time caller here. Everybody on a Sunday, work on your car and listen to the show.
Hey, it's always a pleasure. Chris, I didn't get to chat with you.
This is a great show. I'm checking off all the boxes.
Motor Mouth!
Hey, I don't mess with stock. Stock stinks.
He was under a car or under somebody else's car.
I wanted to commend you on your selection of music.
Motor Mouth!
Cars are for driving, not for eating it.
Even if Ray is talking to Chris on the phone,
Motor Mouth!
In the same room, I'm doing my show.
Get some advice on getting my lawnmower to start up.
Our trained staff of two will help.
And typically, we don't work on that kind of car.
Yeah, I was going to call in and your guest mentioned my dilemma.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Every Sunday, 12 o'clock, my phone goes, Motor Mouth Radio.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
Nobody knows your car's like you.
Ray was here early, but then he had to go through this thing that he does on Sundays.
And what do you have, like 9 people listening to you right now?
Motor Mouth!
Millions of listeners, 9 paying attention.
Hush your mouth and play some more good music.
You just went for 2+ hours on Thursday talking about cars and stuff. I want to see you do 2 minutes. Because you are a motor mouth, my friend.
I am a motor mouth.
Let's face it.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHPC.
Motor Mouth!
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motor Mouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer, 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
The folks dancing got all shook up and started playing that rock and roll music.
Yeah, rock and roll music, any way you choose. I know Chassie Jones is a big rock and roll music fan, and it's great that he let us into that. So, Chris, we are back. Chuck Berry, notwithstanding. Yeah. Where were we? We were talking about something. We were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I got a question. Big question. Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those.
What do you got?
On the Chrysler, I think I had told you after my fiasco with the carburetor that you saved my bacon, where I got the car started by wrapping it with the back of a screwdriver.
Hit it with a hammer.
Hit it with a hammer and got it actually to start, which is incredible if you ask me. But that's what we ended up doing, and that's how I got the car home. But I noticed that when I brought it home, I looked over at the amp meter, and it was discharging more than it was charging.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The needle was on the D side, and I'm like, what can that be? So what I did was I pulled the regulator off. It was an aftermarket regulator,
right.
Not one I'm really fond of. But I was able to clean it. Clean just the tabs off it and clean the little contact inside the box itself and put it back on.
Uh-huh.
And when I started it up, boy, was it charging like a son of a gun. That needle swung all the way to charge. It was vibrating away and bouncing. And I'm like, wonderful. This is perfect. But I never had a chance to actually drive the car. So I took it out yesterday in the last warm day we had here. And I must admit, it is almost like a real car. That's the only way to put it. Like, I put it in reverse. At one time, and this is something I really have to ask. I put the car in reverse, and before you'd have to, like, feed gas to get it out of the garage, almost like the car was going, like, oh, where do you want me to move? What are you kidding me? Now I put it in reverse, and boom, it backed right out. Like, I didn't even have to feed gas. And even when it's on a high idle. And then I turned accessory lights on, the parking lights on, boom, and I get this bright dashboard now.
Nice.
It's like everything is like, all the windows, choom, choom, going up and down, like the, everything is working beautifully.
Okay, all right, good.
And all I did was clean the contacts on my external regulator.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you have full charging voltage, which you obviously didn't have before.
Yeah.
So you were running on a diminished system, and just like it, here we go. You laid it down just like your Explorer. You didn't have the right battery voltage, and look what happens. Your codes wouldn't set right. Your O2 sensors were flaky.
Right.
I think there's a battery lesson in this for you, or a voltage lesson.
Yeah.
Chrysler's always scared me for one fact alone, is that they ran that damn ammeter. I mean, you have full charge voltage through the ammeter in the dash, which is could be 60 amps of current or more, which is talk about a fire starter. But the good thing is, though, I do know that most of those cars did not end in a fiery, well, not because of that, at least, you know, there's other reasons, maybe.
But, no other reasons.
Yeah. but yeah, you know, when you optimize any system in the car, be it the brakes or the fuel or the air, you know, air fuel or charging electrical system, yeah, you're going to see, like I know in my Pontiac, you know that I'm a nut about grounds and return sure. paths. And everything is just rock solid, and it's so nice to see it. Like, I take it for granted now. So when I work on someone else's car or get in someone else's car, I'm like, wow, you know, maybe you should look at some ground paths and, you know, upgrade some of this wiring. And, you know, a lot of people are into it, and, well, a lot of people aren't, and that's the thing. And you know.
And it's true. Because of the teachings of you and Joe and Uncle Ivunj, anytime I see a ground path under the hood, I go and grab the wire ball.
Yeah.
In my toolbox. And I pop that ground off and I just clean it. How long does it take?
Right.
It doesn't take that long. Clean it, put it back on.
Our friend Al did say that one thing you should check is that it may not be overcharging, because that's the job of the regulator, to keep it within the spec.
Yes.
The output spec that's determined by the mothership. And if, and you know, a bad regulator can cause a car or let a car overcharge. And
Very true. And a lot of times the telltale sign is that sulfur smell, which is usually
The battery's cooking. Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually had that happen, but I did go over it with an ohm meter, and I think it was like a little bit above 13 volts. So I know it was.
All right. So then hopefully your ohm meter was a volt meter.
Sorry.
Yeah, 12.5 to a 13.5, 13.8 was always considered. I'm running, my car is at like 14 volts.
Wow.
Yeah. I have no fears because everything is optimized.
I was going to say, it's cooking territory.
Yeah, I mean, 13.8 to 14 is only 2/10 of a volt. So it's, you know, and then you're looking at gauge. You're looking at the gauge. What's the word I'm looking for? The resolution of the gauge, they could be off. We're not talking about calibrated stuff here that's like, you know, lab grade. But if you use a meter, like a Fluke meter or some kind of a digital meter, that would be a lot closer. But you should check it through the RPM range. Check it at idle, rev the thing up, and, you know, just bring the RPM up even slowly, let it come up and see if what the charging voltage is.
Okay.
You could always do the old ammeter, well, you have an ammeter, but, you know, that just gives you charge discharge. You could put an ammeter line that actually shows you amperage. You know, or these days, an amp clamp is the way to go. That's the nicer way to do it.
See, the way I check is the headlight doors on the Chrysler. If you hit the button and the headlight doors go, then it's not charging that well. But if they go, bam, just fly right down. Then,
well,
you know,
that's like what we're saying now. All of the ancillary components are now snappy. They're working faster, like your windows and the lights. And, yeah, those are all indicators right there. So, but
I was pleased. Yeah. And I even turned the headlights on because it was like dusk when I was doing this. And I was like, wow, the headlights are even kind of bright.
They're high yellow.
Yeah, right. They're not beige like they were.
Right.
like a nice crisp beige.
Yeah, one of the nicest upgrades, I mean, a lot of guys now are doing LED headlights even. And I may consider them in the FJ because I'm not happy with the headlight performance in the truck, even though they're halogens. But I'm still trying to decide on a brand of LED.
Well, I was going to ask, how old are the bulbs? Did you change them in the past, or are they the original to the truck?
Yeah, when I got it, I know we were out one night driving around. My wife and I said, man, this thing really is, like, the headlight's dim. So I pulled into my neighbor's driveway because he's got a nice big white door, and I saw, hey, I only have one headlight. So I got out and looked like, yeah, I only have a left headlight. So I bought a pair of 9003 halogens, you know, and put them in. And, I mean, I can see, I would just like to have a better performing headlight. Like I was spoiled because my Mazda 3 had, HID bulbs in it.
Yes.
Those things are phenomenal.
Yes. No, that's true.
And again, I'm relegated to, and I'm hampered by, the truck only has 7-inch headlights. It's got the smaller, you know, it's like the old school, like my Pontiac, the same thing. And you can only get, I read a guy's, he had a dissertation paper on this. The guy was a lighting engineer. I read it years ago. And he talked about the light output and beam possibilities on different headlights. And this was written back in the 80s. So the CBs, the ones like those 10-inch lights, the bigger the light, the better off you can be in terms of light output and pattern. The smaller, you know, it's an inverse, so it's worse as you get smaller. So I'm handcuffed by the size of the light, but I still think I can optimize what's there, make that better, and then decide to add additional, you know, ancillary lighting. But
because there's, I mean, I'm sure there's aiming screws.
I went through
on that light as well.
Yeah, I did that. I'm talking about pure light output. I want to have more output. And
okay,
yeah, so we'll see. But you know, one of the things I did on my Pontiac, I don't have LEDs now, but I have halogens in the 65, mm-hmm. lows and highs. And the thing that made a big difference, which will make a big difference in any older car, modern cars already have this, is the installation of headlight relays. Because yeah. on the GMs, the headlight, you know, you have the switch. If you looked at the schematic from battery, it comes through the switch to the light. All that current's being pulled through into the car through the switch, and then out again, and then it goes to the light. So there's a bunch of wiring in the way, which is it drops current. You have a current drop. You'll have because there's resistance. Now you add to the fact it's 50 or more year old wiring. That
sure.
is, and every connection is as old. The switches is what would burn up after a while. Even those big mm-hmm. Bakelite switches, they would fry, and the light output becomes yellow, you know?
Right.
So by optimizing all of that, I got nice brighter lights. Let's see what we got here, and we say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
Yeah, this is a collect call. How are you?
Sure, Bill. What's happening, Bill?
Yeah, my name's Bill. I'm from Long Island. Yeah. Hi. Back in the 70s, I had two of those Plymouth Dodge-type vehicles with those axle adjusters.
Oh, yeah, right.
I ended up with an oil leak on one of them, pulled the axle, put the seal in, and a couple days later, the oil's all over the place again. I did that seal two or three times. What I didn't realize, those pins you were talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe they float in the middle of that ham assembly, whatever it is.
Yeah, I looked at it because Paul Shai, we looked down the axle tube yesterday, and he told me that one of his other cars, there was a roll pin that held it in place, and that had broken. So that thing was now not working anymore, and it created a bunch of that'll give you axle slop for sure.
That is probably what happened to mine, because what I didn't realize when I took the axle out, the pin on one side must have dropped into the rear.
Right.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. And then I would take the brake shoes when I was at, if you remember, Barbera's.
Oh, yeah.
The starter guy.
Vinny Barbera, yeah.
Yeah, they had that vapor tank with that cancer-causing chemical.
Yeah, probably MEK.
Yeah, the trichloroethylene, whatever the heck that was.
Trichlorofluoroethane, yes.
Yeah, you used to put the brakes like in a basket, and you would boil them. And it would actually cook the gear oil out of the brakes so you could reuse them.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Oh, my gosh.
It's called on the cheap.
Yeah. No, but that works. That's great.
Wow.
Yeah,
can you say cancer line, ended up,
the entire rear axle was no good, so I ended up changing it.
Right. Yeah, well, that's when you could go down to Oil City. Yeah, or July, or down in Oil City and pick up any number of rear ends that were laying around. So
sure.
Yeah, back then I used to be able to get like whole cars for like $50.
Sure.
Pull the parts and then junk the car.
Yep. You got that right, Bill. We used that all the time. Hey, I tell you what. Well, I got an 8 3/4 inch, 323 Sure Grip rear for a Chrysler E-Body sitting next to my garage that I'd love to sell. And those things are getting some big money these days.
Mm-hmm.
Cross your fingers and hope.
Well, yeah. You know what? Well, they I don't know if they're making, I know like for the GMs, even Mosier and a couple other companies are making brand new rear end housings, and they do it for the 9-inch Fords too. I don't know if they're doing it for the Chryslers. I wonder. I haven't seen those yet.
Yeah. Right. And I did use one of those Harbor Freight lifts. We had a 500-pound oven that had to be stacked.
Nope.
So we were able to put it on the lift,
the
crank
table.
It up. and slide it off.
Yeah, that table is great. I, like I said, if I had the room, when I do have the room in the future, that's one of my first buys because I can use that for so many, just to get something up on the workbench that you don't want to have to muscle. You put it on it, so you lift it, you know, a foot or two, and then you just raise it up and slide it off. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we did another one where we didn't have the lift, so three guys picked the oven up, you know, about 36 inches in height and stacked it.
Yeah.
So it was over 150 pounds each.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lots of fun.
Wow.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's amazing.
So, and you got the new and improved smoke machine in the email.
Yes, yes. I sent that over to you.
Yes, thank you. The Scotty Gilmer.
Yeah, but then this guy did it with a Harbor Freight pump and a cigar, and I just like, man, he's wasting a good cigar. I want to use a cigar, you know. I'm thinking of the tar and nicotine going into the engine. It's like,
you know, just to let you know,
the
Bill,
idea with the pump is great because that pushes it in.
Yes, yes. It was this genius idea the guy had. Very good.
Yeah.
And I hear they're coming out with a deluxe model with the Cuban cigars.
I wouldn't go wasting those on my on the engine. Those I'm saving for myself.
Yeah. I actually smoked.
So we'll catch up. Hang in there.
All right, Bill. Thanks.
Thanks, great. Bill.
All right. So long.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. What did you do, Chris? You smoked
who? I actually used the smoke machine with one of those cheap air pumps with that plug into your cigarette lighter.
Oh, okay.
And I was able to smoke I smoked that entire engine and did not find one single vacuum leak, but the smoke came out through the air filter.
Nice.
It went past the mass airflow sensor. It was coming out the air filter box. I'm like, this thing is fine.
Nice, nice.
But yeah, I was using a hand pump and that wasn't working. That's when I went to the cheap tire filler pump with the what was it? The lighter plug, like I said.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I'll tell you what else is lit and burned out and is now ashes in the tray is this show.
Right.
This hour has been burned. We're done. Kim's coming in. Listen to Thunder Road, Best of Springsteen and a Band. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back next week where we'll have hopefully Mr. Clay Kuhn from Kuhn Trucking. Check him out on YouTube so you can get all the skinny before we break it to you next week. Chris, what are we saying to the guys in the parking lot who are waiting for me when I leave?
Don't follow us home and stay away from your rear end.
You got it. All right, Motormouth Radio out. We'll see you next week. 90.3 WHPC.
See you.